Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of In the Garden, right here on KFSK. I'm your host, Daniel Rowan Tucker. On this show, we dig our hands in the dirt, get back to nature, and find that special place of abundance and beauty. Spring is really here at last. Crocuses are coming up. Snow is melting. So today we're going to talk about planting. What you can plant right now, and how to do it properly. There's still snow everywhere, but it's melting fast, and you can help it melt even faster by spreading things like wood ash over the surface of the snow. Any dark-colored material will absorb more heat from the sun and speed up the process of melting that white stuff away. Better yet, if you don't mind some light exercise, start shoveling off your beds and garden areas. Anywhere you expose the ground, you'll soon find little green things growing, and those openings in the snow will get larger faster as the ground warms up in the sunshine. My 8-year-old daughter diligently shoveled off her little garden patch, and she's already been rewarded with blooming crocuses and other hopeful signs of life. Also, with all the road sanding this winter, there's a mother load of sand where the snow is heaped up at the edges of roads and parking lots. I know at least one old gardener who goes around with a bucket and a shovel, collecting this wonderful stuff for his garden beds. That sharp Thomas Bay sand is great for enhancing drainage in your soil mixes, and while the borough does eventually reclaim what's left on the roads with a street sweeper machine, a huge amount of it just gets absorbed into the ditches and road banks every year. I like to think of my sand collecting activities as a very small tax rebate from our local government. The ground beneath the snow is thawed out in most places and perfectly ready for planting trees, shrubs, and perennials. The cool, damp weather with temps in the upper 30s to mid-40s is easy on plants that are being moved around with their roots exposed to the air, so it's a great time to get started on whatever you might be thinking of planting for this year in terms of trees, shrubs, and perennials. Fair-weather gardeners will wait until it's 55 degrees and sunny and everything is green, and then stampede outdoors and start planting whatever they can get their hands on. But the old green thumbs are at work long before then, getting an early start and stretching our brief northern growing season to achieve its fullest potential. There are two primary choices when it comes to shopping for trees and shrubs: potted stock and bare root, with bald and burlap making a less common third. Let's take a closer look at what's available in the nursery trade and how to judge what is the best fit for your needs. Potted plants, also known as container stock, come with their own soil and can be planted right away or kept in the pot for a while if need be. Pot sizes are typically listed in gallons, but for some reason, perhaps originating with some stingy old nursery man, their actual volume is slightly less than what they are listed as, so a quote-unquote 5-gallon pot actually holds only 3.6 gallons of soil, and anyone who knows what a 5-gallon bucket looks like will easily notice the difference in size. Pots are filled with potting soil, which can be mixed from a wide variety of ingredients, but typically contains a combination of bulk organic matter from tree bark or other compost, little white bits of perlite for drainage, and often slow-release fertilizers in the form of little green or yellow balls that you'll see in there. It's important to remember that in their journey through the nursery trade, these potted plants may have been treated with fungicides, pesticides, and herbicides that linger in the potting soil. Wear gloves when planting potted stock if you don't want to be potentially exposed to these substances through your skin, and consider disposing of old potting soil in a separate area if you're concerned about how it might affect your garden soil. I've never seen, personally, obvious effects from potting soil contaminated with these chemicals, but I do know that many nurseries rely heavily on them. I have some friends down south with a tomato farm on San Juan Island, and they ran into trouble one time when they bought a load of soil from a place on the mainland where that soil had been treated with some kind of broadleaf herbicide, and it killed a bunch of their tomato plants when they tried to use it. Yeah, so you got to be aware of that stuff. Common potting soil is mostly organic matter. This is another point I want to make about potting soil. And in our damp climate with high rainfall that we have, I have observed that these potting soils tend to become soggy when they're left out year-round. So trees and shrubs and anything that you're going to keep in a in a container or a pot permanently and kept out in the rain rather than under a covered porch or in a greenhouse, those things should always be repotted with at least 50% sand to enhance the drainage. I have seen some splendid young maple trees sadly succumb to slow drowning from sitting in a compost-rich potting soil that holds water like a sponge, all right, that was just out in the open where it got all the rain and snow and everything. Those soils are great down south, where even the climate of a place like Seattle is significantly warmer and drier than here, but they aren't the right fit for our climate in Petersburg as a year-round soil. Also, as those coarse chunks of bark and other organic matter break down into fine, mucky particles, the soil shrinks and it sinks down in the pot or the raised bed, which leaves your plant slowly sinking down with less and less rooting volume in that container. So that's something else to be aware of. Now, when it comes to planting out potted stock, some research has shown that plants in pots actually respond best when all of the potting soil is washed off of their roots, leaving them naked, as it were, and then they're planted completely into the soil of their new situation, which they can then fully adapt to. I've seen pictures of places where, you know, a pot was just set in the ground. The plant and the soil were taken out as one and set in a hole in the ground. And, you know, depending on the condition of the soil and the difference between the potting soil and the native soil around them, the roots might just stay in the potting soil because it's nice and soft and fertile instead of venturing out into the more difficult native soil there. If you don't take the step of washing off all the soil and planting those roots naked in the ground, it's still good to break up and loosen the potting soil a bit as you plant it. And oftentimes the fine root hairs of the plant, depending on how long it's been in the pot and what kind of plant it is, it can have a really dense network of little fine root hairs holding all that soil tightly together. In that case, it's good to take a knife and make vertical slices in those fine roots. Try not to cut the bigger roots, but just kind of slice through where all those fine roots are holding the soil tightly together. And that will encourage the plant to re-root outwards into the new soil, the native soil of its place where it's been planted, rather than just going around and around in the comfort zone of its little plug of potting soil. The other big thing to watch out for with potted plants is root circling. If the nursery has done their job well, wherever you got this potted plant from, and repotted their plants in a timely manner and not tried to be stingy with pots and soil, then this won't be too much of an issue if they stay ahead of the size of those growing roots and keep sizing them up into bigger pots with more soil. But if the plant has been allowed to outgrow its pot and get cramped, then it may begin the pernicious habit of root circling. The main roots or root begins circling around the bottom of the pot looking for a way out. Now, there are a few square pots out there occasionally in smaller sizes, and those help to mitigate this. And some pots have little ridges on the inside that help deflect the roots from trying to circle around. But the general common pots that you see in the nursery trade are still generally those circular pots, and root circling can definitely happen. If it gets bad enough, the plant can end up strangling itself even years after it was put in the ground and the pot got thrown away. When you take a tree or shrub out of its pot, always look closely for any larger roots beginning to circle around. Straighten them out if possible. Dig your hole larger as needed. If there's a big long root that wants to go straight off to one side, dig your hole bigger or dig a trench off in that direction. If the roots can't be straightened out, trim off the parts that are really trying to curl around cut them off so that it forms no more than a half circle. Ideally, all the roots are pointing straight out and down. So be sure to make your hole big enough to accommodate this configuration. If there is a high water table that's preventing you from digging deeper and making a bigger hole, then build a mound or a raised bed to stay above it. The only plants that really want to be submerged in water in their roots are true bog plants and aquatic plants. Anything you're putting in your garden is going to benefit from not sitting in standing water. So don't let that be an excuse for not making the hole big enough. Think about it, plant it out. The greatest advantage of potted stock plants in pots is that they buy you time to plant in a longer window by giving the plant soil to grow in. Potted stock can be planted in the middle of summer if need be, but bear in mind that this can still be stressful for the plant, and it may grow like a plant already in the ground by the time it starts growing in spring. Pots with soil also add a lot of volume and weight, and the corresponding cost of soil and shipping is passed on to the customer. You're paying for the pot and the soil. You do get to keep them, and over time you can accumulate quite a bit of both pots and potting soil, but just remember, they're not free. Larger trees, sometimes called standard trees, in the nursery trade, are often measured by what's called caliper, which means the thickness of the trunk, typically 1 to 2 inches for the size of trees that we get up here for sale. The heights are often 8 feet or more. Big trees like this are great for instant effect, and they could really prove their value by enhancing the curb appeal of a house that you're trying to sell, or sprucing up a backyard wedding venue at the last minute. But bear in mind that larger plants tend to experience a bigger shock from transplanting, and they may take years to fully recover. It's not unheard of for a smaller, younger tree to overtake a larger one planted at the same time and outgrow it after a few years by virtue of the fact that the small one is able to more quickly adjust to its new home. There's also a wide variation in how different species react to transplanting. Olive trees, for example, are famously resilient, and gnarled ancient specimens of this Mediterranean evergreen can be plopped into the courtyard of a Silicon Valley mansion without much trouble. But I doubt if olive trees would be very happy here in the rainforest. These large standard trees, along with some larger shrubs, and especially things like evergreen shrubs for privacy hedges, may come as what's known as balled-in burlap, or B&B stock. In this case, the roots are packed in kind of a ball of clayish soil that sticks to them, and then all that is wrapped up in burlap cloth and then tied around with twine or wire. B&B stock might be cheaper than potted plants for its size, but it's a little more difficult to handle. Those root balls don't stand up easily on their own. They tend to fall over. They need to be propped up or tied together in a group to keep from falling over, and they're often quite heavy. And they're, in general, I think, a little bit more angled for the professional landscaping crews that are putting in lots of plants, rather than the casual home gardener. Now, bare root plants require special handling and paying close attention to timing in the lead up to the growing system, the growing season. They're for people who are on top of their stuff gardening wise, but they offer special advantages to those who can manage these demands. Bare root plants are usually much more affordable than container plants, and for the savvy gardener or homeowner who can get the planting done at the right time, they are a great alternative to the more common and expensive potted plants. Until planting time, bare root stock must have their roots kept moist, wrapped or packed in a damp medium like sawdust, wet straw, peat moss, shredded newspapers, or even just an ordinary soil with a decent amount of organic matter that's loose and friable. And they need to be put in the ground or into containers by the time they begin to leaf out. because the roots at that point will begin trying to take up water and nutrients to support the new growth. If you're holding bare root stock for a few days or longer prior to planting, find a cool, shady place where they can be healed in. This means their roots temporarily covered with some of those moist materials I just mentioned. Keeping them out of the sun will also help to delay their leafing out and keep the roots from drying out. So just think cool and damp until they go in the ground. Now, the roots of these bare root plants, when it comes to actual planting, it's a different game than just taking something out of a pot and sticking it in the ground. The roots, depending on what species and size the plant is, the roots may be kind of floppy and moppy. So it's important when you're planting them to spread the roots out in the hole so that they radiate out in different directions and extend their full length without being curled back on themselves. A well-known problem in forestry plantings where thousands of bare root seedling trees could be planted out in a single day is something called J-rooting, where a hasty planting leaves the tree's roots curled up like a letter J. It's not good. I planted hundreds of bare root trees and shrubs, and I found that it's often helpful to dig a nice big hole and then make sort of a cone-shaped mound in the middle of the hole. You can put that bare root plant right down on top of the cone, and then all those troublesome floppy roots can be spread out evenly around it like a wig on a mannequin, if you will. Bare root plants can also be put into pots if you have sufficiently large containers to accommodate the roots without fully extending themselves. And it's okay to trim roots a little bit depending on what species it is. Most things you can get away with clipping back the roots a little bit if they're really long. Remember that the roots will get larger throughout the growing season in proportion to the growth of leaves and branches on the top, and the pot will need to be larger than that root mass or else its growth rate will suffer. To some extent, it'll end up starting a root circle, which is what we don't want. Indeed, some nurseries do most of their business by simply buying bare root stock, potting it, and then selling it at a premium to retail customers. And there are also certain plants that propagate easily from cuttings taken before they leaf out in the spring, and you just stick them into a pot or straight into the ground. Willows and poplars, including local cottonwood and various willow species we have around, fall into this category, and they can be planted as rods or poles, or cut up into short little sticks with just a few buds each and planted, you know, half in, half out of the ground. As long as the buds are pointing up the right way. Most species in the currant family are also quite easily propagated from cuttings. This includes black currants, red flowering currants, yosteberries, some roses, not all, the more vigorous climbing roses. Some of those take easily from cuttings, as well as dogwood, red osier dogwood, honeysuckle, and ninebark. That's another nice shrub. Just remember, keep the buds pointing up. An upside-down cutting will not root. Perennials of many kinds like rhubarb, iris, and comfrey can be multiplied by digging up a large, well-rooted plant, dividing the root crown into pieces with a sharp knife, saw, or secateurs, then planting out the pieces in good soil with adequate sun. Keep your eyes out for plants that might provide material for propagation. Ask around among gardeners you know. Many gardeners are happy to share or trade what they have, especially if it means a plant that they love will grace other gardens. Annuals are a different story. Direct seeding annuals, the soil's still too cold for most things. You may be getting starts going inside or in a greenhouse. There's definitely starts available from some folks. That's kind of a different game. Germinating seeds requires more warmth generally, but for things that already have an established root system, like trees and shrubs and perennials, the season is wide open, folks. So if you want to have a beautiful garden, don't sit around twiddling your thumbs waiting for the last patch of snow to melt. Get started. As you can see, there are a host of options out there for getting your hands on planting material, whether potted, B&B, bare root, or just dug up and divided by a generous neighbor who has enough to share. So, now that the snow is melting in earnest and the birds are singing and little shoots of grass are popping up along the roadsides, you really have no excuse for neglecting your poor old garden any longer. Get out there and plant something. That's all for this week, folks. Thanks for joining me for another episode of In the Garden, right here on KFSK.